In just a bit, the author of Nomadland tells us how she fixed up a secondhand van and drove around the country for 2 years. It introduced her to something that rarely got talked about, the itinerant community of older Americans who make ends meet by living and working on the road. Also, a clergywoman from Iowa looks into what those Tibetan prayer flags on your neighbor's porch are supposed to mean. And some of my German friends have a few ideas about the craft beer scene in the U.S. and how it compares with what they have back home. That's all coming up on today's Travel with Rick Steves. Let's start the hour by turning the tables for an interview I gave recently to longtime TEDx organizer Phil Klein. He wanted to know what I thought helps to make our travels more meaningful when we visit another country. He wondered what would happen if we approached our individual travels, kind of like the way a good tour guide leads a group when introducing them to other cultures. Would that help us to see the world from a different perspective and perhaps take another look at our place in it? Here's a short bit from the Zoom interview I enjoyed with Phil.
What would it be like, do you think, to live in a world where everyone had well-developed abilities to be a good host and a good tour guide? How do you think people might treat one another in that kind of an environment?
You know, it's got to go two ways. You can be a good tour guide, but you got to have people that are eager to receive, who are eager to learn, who want to be changed, who want to grow. Now, in my community, we could see life in my community as a tour also. If we wanted to learn from each other, if we wanted to have this, I think, Rousseau nature of the social contract, where we all give up a little bit more than you might think is necessary in order to live peaceably together, rather than that don't tread on me lock social contract, which is just get out of my way. I can do anything I want as long as I don't hurt anybody else. You know, that sort of socialism, communityism, then you could have a chance where we could all learn from each other and we could be thirsty for inspiration from other people. That would be pretty utopian. I hadn't thought about that. But what I love about my role as a tour guide is I've got people who knowingly get on that bus knowing they're going to be changed and they're thirsty for change. And they want me to help keep them safe and curate all this information. But they want to be different when they get out of this tour. And that's why they dedicate the time and the money to take the tour.
So how do you believe tours actually do change people?
I have to be really careful because I'm thankful for how travel has changed me. And I just want to hit people on the head with this, you know. But you can't do that. That's non-productive. What you'd have to do as a more thoughtful guide is respect that everybody has a different life story and it's legit. And then thoughtfully, gently, put them in a cultural situation that's going to challenge them, open them up to it, and let them draw their own conclusions. It's a beautiful thing. And I've seen it. I've seen people who are very set in their ways. I won't say liberal or conservative. I'll just say set in their ways. And then I've watched them over the course of a 2 or 3 week tour, struggling with this reality that Europeans do things differently than we do in America, and they're thankful for it. We don't need to say that's right and we're wrong. The first step in a broader perspective is to realize good people, thoughtful people, deal with the same challenges in different cultures differently. And it's cool to compare notes. You know, I'm really into drug policy reform, not because I'm pro-drugs. I just think our drug laws are very painful and non-productive in our society. And Europe has the same appetite for drugs and the same problem with opioid abuse and addiction and the same enthrallment with marijuana and alcohol. How do they do it? How do they do it in a safe way? In Scandinavia, in June, you see flatbed trucks all decorated up with kids painted and wearing costumes, just drunk as can be, going from house to house on graduation, and their parents are pouring the beer. Their parents hired the flatbed truck and the driver because the parents know the kids are going to drink anyways. Let's organize it in a way where the kids aren't going to drink and drive. Now, that's called pragmatic harm reduction. That's good parenting. That's European. That is so European to me. It's going to happen anyways. Let's not just say no. Let's just find a way to let it happen where nobody gets hurt. We've all been there. We've all been kids wanting to do that. We've all been parents wishing our kids weren't going to do that. Scandinavians, they host the keggers as parents. And I think That'd be a tough sell in America, but it sure works for Scandinavia. I celebrate that. I love being in Scandinavia in graduation time because it's a joyful occasion and the kids are all breaking into adulthood in a fun way.
You talk about learning from other cultures. Is a way in which that learning is also a political act? That would be another kind of way to get at that.
Right. You know, I find it so entertaining that people complain that I'm making travel a political act. To me, thoughtful travel gives you empathy for the other 96% of humanity. It lets you see your country in the context of the rest of the world. It lets you be appreciative of how privileged you might be, of how there are consequences on how we live our lives that ripple all through our community. They ripple into the future and they ripple south of the border. When I say south of the border, I mean, you know, into the developing world. And when we travel, we bring home the most beautiful souvenir, and that's this empathy for the other 96% of humanity. And then when we live our lives here as citizens of this most powerful nation on the planet, just mindful of that, we're making travel a political act. A lot of people say, oh, there's hungry people and you're going spending so much money go down there to see this poverty in Central America. If you really cared, you would just give it to some food aid and then they would be able to live better. Well, you can make that point. But when I travel, I knowingly spend five times the annual income of the people I'm taking photographs of just to go visit with them. It's okay because I'm going down there, I'm learning, and I'm coming home with a better understanding of them, with an empathy for their struggles. And when I take that empathy into the voting booth, it seems perverse, but I don't vote for what's good for me. I vote for what's right, what's ethical, what's good for the world, what's good for people who are less privileged than me, what's good for the future, what's good for our children, what's good for people with no voice. And if you really were selfish, if you've traveled, you know that even if you're motivated only by greed, you don't want to be filthy rich in a desperately poor world. It's a miserable place to raise your kids. You want to work for that kind of justice. That's travel as a political act. And if that's something you're afraid of, that's a shame, because I think that's the most beautiful thing about travel. It makes me a better citizen of the world.
That's part of a Zoom interview I recently gave to Phil Klein of the TEDx organization in Seattle about why I travel. Hey, I'm Rick Steves, and I've always thought of myself as a budget traveler. Over nearly 50 years of exploring Europe and around the world, I've discovered that the more money you can save on overpriced hotels and tourist scams, the more you have to spend on the sights and experiences that really make for an unforgettable trip. That's the kind of practical wisdom and fun we aim to bring you each week on Travel with Rick Steves. Frankly, everything you hear here on your public radio station is a real value. You get connected to the world by just listening. It's up to you to help support this station during these occasional fundraising drives. This is how the non-commercial public broadcasting system works in our country. Listener contributions are a major part of the station's annual budget, and that support lets you and your neighbors rely on this station well into the future. These have been tough times for all of us lately, yet public radio is there for you. The people who make it happen are finding new and innovative ways to do the work that needs to get done. You can rely on us to bring you what you expect to hear every time you turn to this place on the dial. That's why we're asking you to determine what it's worth to you. Please do what you can to support the ongoing work of public radio in your community. Can we count on your support right now? I hope so. Thank you.